briefly, I'll turn the music off, start my recordings, and do your introduction. One moment. Please stand by. Good day, and welcome to the Center for American Progress Action Fund conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Tom Perriello. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much. My name is Tom Perriello. I'm the president and CEO of the Center for American Progress Action Fund and counselor for policy at the Center for American Progress. And we have put out a new report today, Florida's Worst Election Offenders, which is a new study, and it's entirely statistically based, looking at the performance, not just in Florida as a whole, but specifically county to county, on a wide range of issues related to people's access to the ballot. And what we found was, in some ways not surprising, people are having dramatically different voting experiences depending on the county in which they are registered and voting. We used existing data, and there have been efforts before. And as you all know, there's always interest in Florida when it comes to voting issues, and it's been the subject of many stories. So we looked at a series of factors, including voter turnout, overall voter registration rates for African Americans and for Hispanics, rate of registered voters purged from the list, waiting times, provisional ballots cast, provisional ballots rejected, and absentee ballots rejected. I went through those quickly, but they'll be in your materials. And what we found was that there was significant statistical variation looking at the 40 most populous counties. Across the nine factors, Columbia County ranked the worst overall for voter accessibility. It had the very lowest voter turnout rate and voter registration rate of all the counties analyzed. The worst six counties stood out from the rest for their poor performance. In other words, there was a significant difference between how bad the first six were versus the others. And those were Columbia, Putnam, Bay, Alachua, Duval, and Hillsborough. And the two counties that had the best performance in the report were St. John's and Clay. Some of the biggest counties that have been subject to scrutiny in the past, like Miami-Dade and Palm Beach, performed among the worst on waiting times for voters and rates of provisional ballots rejected. But their overall performance put together was more closer to the average for the state. So what we're seeing, not just in Florida but across the country, is a range of challenges to people's access to voting. And we dove deep in Florida, again, because of the attention and scrutiny it's gotten in the past, to look at this county-by-county analysis. We do not make policy recommendations in this report. We leave that for journalists and policymakers and others. But we do want to draw attention to the fact that there are both significant statewide factors that create environments that are either more conducive to voter access or more conducive to limiting voter access. And then a variety of factors that affect that at the county-by-county level. So again, this is a quantitative analysis, just looking at those factors county-to-county, and we hope this will be something that is of use to journalists, investigators, policymakers, and others. We do believe, as a policy matter at CAP Action, that we should be that everybody should have equal access to voting, and that we should. This is something we should be encouraging, not discouraging, as a matter of policy. But in terms of our analysis, again, we just looked at the numbers. To walk you through it a little bit more, I'm going to hand it over to Joshua Field, who's the deputy director of our Legal Progress Program, and have him go through that in a bit more detail.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, so what I wanted to do is build off what Tom was talking about and get into a little bit more detail on the factors that we used, the sources that we used to provide some additional insight. Like Tom said, we're very excited because what this does is something that hasn't been done before. It provides a county-by-county picture of what happened in Florida during the 2012 election. And what we're trying to show and what this report does show is that despite the fact that there may be two voters may be voting for the same candidate or may have voted for the same candidate for president or the U.S. Senate in 2012, two voters in the same state may have a completely different voting experience based simply on where they live. We have over 3,000 counties and localities throughout the country that administer elections in different ways. 67 of those are in Florida. As Tom mentioned, we looked at the most populous 40 counties. Let's talk a little bit about where we got the data from. We used data collected by the Election Assistance Commission, We used citizen voting age population data from the U.S. Census Bureau across all counties. And we used a study commissioned by the Advancement Project that looked at voting wait times. And we analyzed the 40 most populous counties in Florida simply because we found that counties with smaller populations that have smaller sample sizes for the data were more likely to be influenced by statistical abnormalities. That's why we focused on the top 40. We wanted to paint the most clear picture that we possibly could. What we also want to do, and the way we analyze this, is not a simple counting method. We realized that looking at some factors, we thought it would make the most sense and create the clearest picture to compare it to the state average. What we wanted to do is identify the counties that stood out from that state average so policymakers and people on the ground in Florida can start asking questions why there's a difference. We compare the frequency in which a county takes an action that could make it harder for a citizen to cast his or her vote with that state average. We controlled it for population, and we did it for every factor that we analyzed. On top of that, we combined the county scores for each factor that came up with our overall rankings. So we provide the rankings both overall, comparing all nine factors to one another, as well as everyone, when you look at the report, you can look at each factor and see how each county performed. What we acknowledge as well is that numbers aren't everything. This is a very in-depth and a rich statistical analysis as to the differences within the counties. And we're hoping at this point that experts on the ground can use it as a foundation to reach out to local officials, figure out why certain counties perform better than others, and start having a conversation of what can be done to ensure that the voting experience is fairly similar from county to county, which we have shown it is not at this point. And with that, I want to turn it over to Brad Ashwell with Common Cause in Florida. He's one of those people on the ground that we are hoping, as an example, can take this, run with it, and look a little deeper. So, Brad?
Thanks. I'm Brad Ashwell of Common Cause. And, I guess I would just start by saying I don't think anyone can look at Florida's elections and the history of Florida elections in the last decade without seeing plenty of room for improvement as a whole, and it's very nice to have this county-by-county analysis and to begin that discussion, because there is a lot of variation between the counties. The mantra we continually hear in the legislature is that, one size doesn't fit all, that supervisors need flexibility, and they're right. There's a big difference between Levy County and Miami-Dade, but we also have to look at criteria that impact voters and accessibility for voters, particularly because of a national, basically a SCOTUS decision, Shelby County v. Holder, which essentially gutted Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. So now we're dealing in a post-Shelby world, and the protections that at least five Florida counties directly received are gone, which we believe could indirectly embolden some, possibly supervisors, but, we're more concerned about county commissioners in the Florida legislature and others who could make decisions that might impact voters adversely, particularly minority voters, where they don't really have to worry about the same monitoring they had to deal with in the past. They don't have to worry about potential ramifications of the, Justice Department lawsuit. I should contextualize what I'm saying in that those of us working to improve voter accessibility on the ground in Florida, and virtually every voting rights group I know of wants to work with supervisors of elections. They are often one of our best allies in the legislature. And I think most of them are very well intentioned. They deserve a lot of credit for the work they've been doing in the legislature and for rejecting the voter purge both in 2012. And they've really been holding the Secretary of State's feet to the fire this cycle as well. So I don't think this should be looked at as being hostile towards supervisors. I think there is a very fair reason for us to look critically at the variation between counties and the flexibility these supervisors have. There's a big difference in how many early voting days and minimum hours they can offer. It's largely in each supervisor's hands as to whether they will go forward with the voter purge list if the secretary presents it to them. So they have a lot of latitude, and I think this is a great beginning of that discussion and closer look at the counties. But I do want to say we look at the supervisors as allies in a lot of respects, and very much want to work with them to improve elections over the next decade. And I'll end my comments there. And I'll hand it over to Sonia. Sonia,
if you could take yourself off mute and tell your story.
Yes, can you all hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay, I'm so sorry. I new phone, so it's kind of difficult to operate. My name is Sonia Gibson, and I am an educator of 10 years in Palm Beach County, Florida, and I'm a volunteer leader with Florida New Majority. And I'd just like to share a little bit of my voting wait time experience with you all. My experience actually began at a early voting site where I stood in line for approximately 9 hours, which I couldn't stand there any longer. I decided to wait until actual voting day. And when I went to the site that I was assigned to, I stood in that line for 10 hours. And it was a long wait. While I was in that line, I witnessed a lot of things in that line, voters being turned away for different discrepancies like name changes, address changes, and different things like that. But my waiting time, I waited with my daughters. It was very gruesome. I waited there all day. I thought that I would, you know, be in and out at least within the three-hour time frame, but I wasn't. I stood in that line for 10 hours. You know, I believe that voting is a fundamental right, and it should be enshrined into law. You know, and it should be accessible and easier access for myself and the members of my community. And that's my experience.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And we've certainly heard stories from around the state. And one of the things that we want to do is combine the statistical analytical work with you know, test that against experiences on the ground. And as Brad mentioned, in both cases, you've seen these things reinforce the idea that we're not meeting the standards that most people would set, but also that you have a combination of folks who've been working very hard to try to make this better and those who've been doing that less so. But we're going to leave that to others to say. With that, I think we will open it up to questions from the line. And if the moderator wants to give people instructions on how to do that, we'll move forward.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using your speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal. We'll take our first question from Janelle Irwin with WMNF.
Yeah, this might be probably just a logistical question first off. Will there be a list of this study and all the findings available?
Yes. Joshua, is it available online already?
Yeah, I believe it's online, and I believe if it hasn't been sent out already, there'll be a press release with all the details and all the statistics that are will be made available, all the tables for each factor, as well as the overall.
And if you have additional questions, you can reach out to me, Madeline Meth, at mmeth@AmericanProgressAction.org.
Okay, and with that out of the way, what are the plans moving forward now that you have this information? Is there any kind of action plan set in place?
Well, again, you know, we're a think tank, and we've done the research we can do, and we are more than happy to engage with policymakers and public officials and others, along with obviously the groups that do this, live and breathe this in Florida, like Common Cause and others. And so, you know, we hope our research will feed into that. We do not have an action plan ourselves around translating this into a legislative agenda.
That's all I have. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
We'll take our next question from John Kennedy with Palm Beach Post.
Yes, hi. I actually have, if you don't mind, sort of two questions. The first question, I just wanted to see if you could clarify for me. You looked at, is it 40 counties?
That's right.
The 40 most populous counties, yes.
40 most populous. Okay. And then secondly, I'm wondering as well, most election law changes in the state are cast under the idea that they have to be uniform by the state legislature. are you suggesting that somehow the legislature could enact provisions that would allow, as you described, this flexibility for the counties, that would also be close to being perceived perhaps as non-uniform? How do you get around that? Do you have any suggestions?
You know, and I think Brad may have mentioned the flexibility factor, so I'll defer to him to see if he has any additional thoughts. But as far as the thinking on the CAP side, we aren't making policy recommendations. We thought that this was an interesting opportunity to take a deeper look on the statistical side and then leave it up to the people on the ground that have a better sense of what's working to start having these conversations. So I don't know if Brad has anything to add, but as far as the CAP side, this was a first step. This was a foundation, and we don't have any policy recommendations at this point.
I'll put that. Hey, John, this is Brad Ashwell. I think the bill that passed last session is a good example of where they create flexibility and variation, you know, while at the same time creating a uniform statewide law. Early voting is the best example. I kind of hate to use that because it's been such a lightning rod of an issue, but they, you know, the law basically expanded early voting to a minimum of 8 days and a maximum of 14. And, you know, in some cases, you know, you'll have counties where 8 makes sense or fewer makes sense. But, you know, that's just one example of where they've created variation and flexibility. And I don't know if you remember, but that was sort of the mantra last legislative session was flexibility for the supervisors. In terms of the locations, they kind of went, you know, where they can conduct early voting, they kind of went against their rhetoric. And they greatly expanded the number of locations and types of locations that could conduct early voting, but didn't give them ultimate flexibility. They still wanted to restrict them slightly. So that's just one real obvious area where that sort of flexibility exists.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question from Amy Sherman with PolitiFact.
Yeah, I have two. I wondered if Tanya could identify the early voting date and site that she went to in Palm Beach and then the Election Day voting site she went to. And then I had a question on the report. When you were done, did you share your findings with the Secretary of State or Supervisor of Elections, and did you get any response? I'd be particularly interested in a response you got from Hillsborough, Broward, or Miami-Dade.
Sonia, do you want to start?
Yes. I did not share my experience with the Secretary of State, but we had many rallies where the supervisor election did come where I shared my experience. So she, you know, she is very much aware of the experiences that I had at the Westgate location in West Palm Beach, Florida. And the times and dates, I remember the times, they both were in the morning, 8 o'clock, but no, the first one was 7:30, the early voting date was 7:30 in the morning, and the actual election day was at 8 o'clock.
So Westgate was your early voting location or your election day location?
Westgate was my election day location.
And then where was your early voting location and what day did you go to?
It was the day right before the election day, and it was at a Dunkin' Donuts in Okeechobee Boulevard.
I can't hear you. What was the location?
The location was at a Dunkin' Donuts on Okeechobee Boulevard.
Dunkin' Donuts was your early voting location?
Yes.
And that was the day before Election Day?
Yes, that was the day before Election Day.
And that's where you stood in line for 9 hours?
That's where I stood in line for 9 hours.
Okay. And then can someone else answer my question about did you share your findings with the Secretary of State or the supervisors?
We have not shared that. The report has just gone public, but we will be happy to share it with them and with any other officials. But we have not done so and do not have a reaction at this point.
Well, as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1. We'll take our next question from Steve Bosquet with Tampa Bay Times.
Hi, good morning, all. I wanted to ask an open-ended question of you two speakers about, based on what you found in this report, give an example of what constitutes a well-run, well-administered county election operation. In other words, what kind of a county? St. John's came out pretty highly in this report, but my question I'm asking is, what factors make for a well-run, well-administered election in a Florida county?
Thanks for that question. Beyond what we focused on were the factors. So we aren't going any further from that. We simply are looking at the factors that we analyzed. And essentially what we did is based on those factors, we were comparing the counties that were statistically divergent from the norm. So you should think of these rankings almost as the worst performing counties are those that are that stood out as anomalies from what someone should expect to have an average voting experience in Florida. So as far as what actually happened on the ground, this report doesn't go into detail in that. And what we were hoping to do is that this serve as a foundation for people to look a little deeper on the ground level and start painting that picture of exactly what the best practices are.
Yeah, and again, to go back to some of the factors, that means that in a place like St. John's and Clay, you have high voter turnout, low wait times, high registration rates, low number of provisional ballots being cast or rejected, as well as the rate of registered voters being purged. So we're looking at the results of those factors in those counties rather than necessarily taking a step back to analyze why those counties in particular tended to overperform on those factors. To Joshua's point, these are measured against the average county. So this is really measuring counties against other counties rather than against some absolute norm. And then, Brad, I don't know if you wanted to cite any additional things on that.
Well, I mean, this is just something a lot of the voting rights groups have been wrestling with lately. Again, this report kind of prompts, I don't want to say prompts, it comes at a time where we're looking at the same thing in the state and looking at each county and trying to devise criteria, really a survey by which we can, approach each county commissioner and evaluate how things are working. So I don't know how into detail I can get without going, deep into the weeds, but the counties that are doing well, I guess I'm being sort of anecdotal here, and this isn't based on hard research like the Center for American Progress has conducted, but, we see supervisors getting, an adequate number of poll workers, sufficient training, polling sites for early voting and regular voting. I mean, there are all sorts of details in how they're administering the elections each cycle. And I mean, I'd be happy to talk to you more in depth offline, Steve.
And just to add, Tom did a good job of explaining some of the better performing counties. I can provide a small snapshot on how Columbia County performed on the factors. It was found to be the worst performing county overall, and the reason why is that it had the worst voter turnout of its citizen voting age population of the counties that we analyzed. It also had the lowest percentage of registered voters, the second lowest percentage of eligible African-American voter registration, and the third lowest percentage of eligible Hispanic voter registration. And it also had one of the highest percentage of absentee ballots rejected, nearly two times more than the average Florida county. So that paints a little picture of why Columbia County stood out and how those factors kind of all work together. And again, it should be noted that the six worst counties in Florida were statistically above all those that came after those. So the top six really stood out as being anomalies from the state average.
Next question.
Well, that does conclude our question and answer session for today. Mr. Perriello, I would like to turn the conference back over to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you all very much for participating. Again, the report is online, and you can follow up with any of us. For CAP, you can contact Madeline Meth at mmeth@americanprogress.org. We thank you for your participation and look forward to your additional questions. Thank you so much.
This does conclude today's presentation. Thank you for your participation.